through on our account, and we've come to Ruth. Sometimes when you preach, you kind of lead up to this people and say, look, this is the final punch, but I'm going to give it away. It's great, isn't it? You can just write this one line and you can turn off if you need to. How much does your faith dictate your future? What are we choosing to do to make sure God's plans become our plans? There. Ruth, covered. Done. I was talking to a friend of mine, and he had been widowed many years ago. But he was telling me about his second wife. And what was very interesting, as he was telling the account of how he had met her, was two things. First of all, the phrase, I wasn't looking for love. And then he went on to explain how this relationship developed. But more importantly for me, I could just see the delight in his eyes. This was a man in love. And it was just lovely to hear, to see, and to witness in his life that this situation had existed. And he so enjoyed it, he just loved telling people about how they met. And I tend not to like the word story for using anything to do with the Bible. I prefer the word an account. Story has too many connotations with fairy tales and things. But this really is an account of a love story. And that's what we see in Ruth. God's love story for us. And what we see is this symbolically, the way that Ruth and Boaz interact is simply a symbol for how God interacts with his bride, the church. So, the initial setting, once they move away from Jerusalem, is to head to Moab. And Moab was the place, actually, and it only just happens to tie up from the last time Moses was talking to people from Deuteronomy last time. That's where he was giving the talk. He was saying, when you go and take the promised land, make sure you stay in there, do everything right. And we just happen to have picked on the book of Ruth now, where we find this person who's leading his family, Elimelech, is leading his family away from the promised land back into Moab, which he shouldn't have been doing, by the way. It's not the right thing to do. Moab's origins come from Genesis 19. They trace their line back to Lot. And so Lot obviously was the nephew of Abraham. And so these two groups are linked. But not always, but often we find Moab basically was a pain in the neck to Israel. And so they didn't get along terribly well. But we get a few things which we've got to look into. Later on in Samuel, we read these words. The Lord said to Samuel, do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. The Lord looks at the heart. And what we see here is a Moabitess. We see Ruth, who everything technically is stacked against, and I'll show why in a second. But God says, I'm not judging by the outward appearance, I'm judging by the heart. And that's encouraging for you and I, because our heart can be turned towards Christ, and God sees that and responds to that. So I say to you again, how much does your faith dictate your future? Romans 8 says, we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purposes. So in the house of bread, Bethlehem, there's a famine. And the head of the household has sold everything he's got already to try and pay and keep his family. He's got nothing left. And so he goes, blow it, I'm off to Moab. Don't ask me why he decides to go there. Maybe they had food at the time. And when he arrives down there, he's got his two sons and his wife with him. And at some point during that process, two things happen. His two sons find two wives. So they're marrying people they're not meant to be marrying. And then he dies. And when we carry the account on, his two sons die, which is where we get to the point where eventually his widow says, right, I'm going back home. And she has this interaction and says to her, technically her daughters-in-law, says, go back to your mothers. Actually, if you read it, it says, go back to your mothers, and they say house in the translation. It actually says tents. Go back to your mother's tents. Go become part of your mother's households again. And we see that they say no, and she says, go back. No. And one says, oh, okay, I'll go back. And then she said, go back for a third time. And eventually Ruth says, stop telling me to go back. Three times she told her to go back. Stop telling me to go back. I'm staying with you. Orpah might have gone back. And that's why we're reading the book of Ruth, not the book of Orpah. Because Ruth was the one who comes out with this great statement, which says, I'm going to make your people my people and your God my God. I mean, let's just think about this. What does Ruth know about the God of her mother-in-law? I mean, Naomi's come down into this area and said, we worship the God who's brought us to the promised land. And we worship him so much that we left the promised land. And of course, then my husband died, and now your husband died, and your brother-in-law died as well. So really, as someone puts it, at the end of a decade of disobedience, all that remains were three lonely widows and three Jewish graves in a heathen land. But that's the God who Ruth decides she wants to throw a lot into. I'm going with him. All the circumstances were against her. I've just lost my husband. I've got to give up the place I've been. I've got to say goodbye to all my family relations. Oh, what a jerk of a God this is. But that's not her response. She says, no, I'm going to go all in. I'm going to be with you, Naomi. You're my mother. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Someone said that Ruth's statement is one of the most magnificent confessions found anywhere in Scripture. I'm all in for God. I'm all in for following Yahweh. I'm going to make everything necessary to make him my primary thing. I say again to you, how much does your faith dictate your future? So they go back. They're broke. He sold the land, or at least he sold the rights to the land when he left. And so Naomi doesn't have anything at all. I've got nothing to offer you. And so they turn up. Here's Naomi, and here's my daughter-in-law, or ex-daughter-in-law, whatever you want to call her, the Moabitess. And so they come up with this idea, well, what are we going to do? And most of us here probably haven't had arranged marriages, but I know quite a few of us do come from cultures where arranged marriages happen. And this is a culture we're talking about where arranged marriages happen. And so Naomi arranges a marriage. Got a plan. Okay, we've got this thing called a kinsman redeemer. A kinsman redeemer is somebody who's related to you who wants to help you out. And what they're allowed to do is they're legally allowed to buy back stuff for you. So Naomi's husband had sold the land which is due to him. Now this is the important bit. Land was what connected the people of Israel to Yahweh. It's why the promised land is so important. If you've got land, you have that connection to God. That's the demonstration that the promise that Yahweh gave to his people is true. But if you give the land away, you give your connection away. And so God put a rule in place. He says, I'm not going to let you be an idiot and just give your land away. I'm not going to allow just one person to start collecting land and land and land. I mean, it's frightening to me to think that there are farms in Australia, which I think are bigger than some countries, owned by one person. I mean, what's going on? And specifically, God says, I'm not allowing that to happen. What you can do is you can sell the rights to the land for a certain amount of time. But if you ever get the money to buy it back, it's automatically allowed. And it's at the end of 50 years, it's given back to you anyway. It's just there, you can't keep it. And so this kinsman redeemer is this character built into the system which says, okay, you're broke. You're in a real bad situation. You've had to sell everything you got to pay your way. But if someone of your relation comes back and says, I want to take that, they're allowed to do it. But it gets a bit deeper than that as well. But we'll come to that. And so Naomi says, hey, listen, I've got this idea. There's a kinsman redeemer, and I think that's the person who will be good for you. And what I want you to do is I want you can go play for him and show to him that you are interested in getting married. And let's see what he does. So this is what I want you to do. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. And so we know that Ruth's been instructed. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. He turned and there was a woman lying at his feet. Who are you? He asked. I'm your servant Ruth, she said. And this is the key one. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of our family. We'd go, do you want to get married? But she says that. If a foreigner resides among you and you become rich, and any of your fellow Israelites become poor and sell themselves to the foreigner or to a member of the foreigner's clan, they retain the right of redemption after they have sold themselves. One of their relatives may redeem them. You're the person who can redeem me. Would you like to redeem me? Ezekiel records this statement from God, and when I passed by again, I saw you were old enough for love, so I wrapped my cloak around you to cover your nakedness and declare my marriage vows. I made a covenant with you, says the Sovereign Lord, and you became mine. In Ezekiel, God uses the description of saying, I throw my cloak around you, and you became mine, O Israel. It was an accept way of saying, I'm going to invite you into my family. I'm going to make you mine. I'm going to accept your proposal. So what's going on here? She clambers to his feet. She's putting herself forward and saying, will you accept me as your wife? And in so doing, will you make me and redeem me? Well, if we go through the whole action, he actually says, well, listen, I'd love to do it, but I can't. I'm not the closest relative. There's an order to these things. I can't just go and do it. There's someone ahead of me. Tell you what, I'll ask them. And if they don't, come back to me. But thank you very much for even considering me. Because I thought, you know, you being a young lady, you'd go after the young guys, not come after me. Well, the outcome is, the one who's closer, the one who's got the legal right, basically goes, yeah, okay, I could take her back. I think I will buy the land. Okay, says Boaz, no problem, you can buy the land. But you've got to understand, if you buy the land, legally it's actually owned by the Moabiters. It's owned by Ruth. So if you buy the land, you've got to buy her. And there's this strange law which says, and therefore, whatever child you have with her, that child gets to own the land, not your own kids. Ooh. Says the bloke, I remember that now. I don't want to do that because it endangers my own estate. I don't want to pass it on to somebody else. So I'm not going to buy her back. Great, says Boaz. I'll take her. I'll buy the land. I'll pay off the debts. I'll re-establish systems. And I will marry her. Woohoo! Let's have a party. Then the elders and all the people at the gate said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel. May you be standing in Ephrath and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, who Tamar bore to Judah." Wow. So they're all really, really happy. This is going to happen. It's incredible. There's a further declaration. So Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. And when he made love to her, the Lord enabled her to conceive and she gave birth to a son. The woman said to Naomi, not to Ruth, by the way, Naomi, her mother-in-law, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth." Then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. The woman living said, "Look, Naomi has a son." And they named him Obed. And he was the father of Jesse, the father of David. It's great, isn't it? Ruth has the child, but is Naomi going, woohoo! And why? Because Naomi now has been reestablished back into the community. She now has the land which reconnects her. We see that through Ruth's dedication that God has looked and said beyond just, hey, Moabite is not allowed in. Said, no, I've looked at the heart of this one and she's allowed in. That was good, wasn't it? So again, I say to you, how much does your faith dictate your future? Do you know what's great? That's not even the sermon. That's just prep. That's the sermon. It's the last part. This is the genealogy of David. This is how it concludes the book of Ruth. Sticks a genealogy down there. This is the family line of Perez. They mentioned him. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron was the father of Ram. Ram the father of Nimadab. And Nimadab the father of Nashon. Nashon the father of Salmon. Salmon the father of Boaz. Boaz the father of Obed. Obed the father of Jesse. And Jesse the father of David. David, the greatest king that Israel ever knew prior to Christ arriving. Absolutely incredible. But the key point is this one. Salmon, by the way, this is from Matthew, just in case you hadn't noticed, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth, and Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of King David. Salmon married Rahab. Rahab, the prostitute. Rahab, the innkeeper. Rahab, who helped the spies when they went into Jericho. Rahab, who in Jericho was completely against anything which Israel stood for, but when she met the spies, changed her whole life around and said, I know all these people inside these walls, but I'm not sticking with them. I'm sticking with that army outside. I'm specifically going to throw my lot in, and I'm going to do that. I'm going to signify it by putting something on my doorway so that when the walls fall down, you know that I'm here. I mean, actually, it's quite an interesting concept. If you actually remember, they walked around seven times and then all the walls fall down. And it must be quite interesting because they said she put it on the outer wall. So how her house must be on the outer wall. So one assumes her wall didn't fall down. That must be quite funny, really, isn't it? Whole walls fall down except this one bit. And they've all been told, see that place where you've got that red cord hanging down? We don't go attack in there. Go take the rest of the place, but she's protected. And at the end of it, Salmon must have gone, that's the woman I want. I know she's a complete foreigner. has nothing to do with the people of Israel, hasn't gone and walked the 40 years with us, knows nothing about God, but she's the one who committed herself, and so I'm marrying her. And do you know what? I can just imagine Salmon sitting there going, hey, Boaz, let me tell you how I met your mum. Woohoo! It's cool. And he tells her the tale. And he grows up knowing, actually, we look beyond what our birth was. We look beyond just where we came from. We look beyond that this person was a prostitute. This person was everything which stood against ethically where God was. This is the woman. And so when he grows up, he's been trained to see as a kinsman redeemer, because that's what kicks in. He's been trained to see, look beyond what the birth things say and look to the character of the person. And so when suddenly he wakes up one night and there's a Moabite woman at his feet, he doesn't go, ugh, Moabite. He goes, what a cool woman. Because I've known all about her. She's the one who left everything, left her people, left everything that was familiar to her and came and kicked in with us, the Israelite people, because she wanted to be under God. And so I'm going to respond to that. That's incredible. It's incredible that God had prepared his heart for this very moment. All that time back there, and we see that preparations for this moment that he wakes up and finds this woman at his feet, and he goes, yes, you are worthy to be part of the people of God, and I'm going to move heaven and earth to make sure that happens. And as a result of which, we not only get a child coming, but that child becomes, instead, through the family line, the ancestor of the greatest king, David. Wow. What a setup. It's superb. And you know what's great? That's not even the sermon. Because actually what it all gets to is this becomes an illustration. It becomes an illustration which we may get of the love that God has for us, in that Jesus wants us in his kingdom and he's going to move heaven and earth. Jesus sees beyond our sinful past, because it acknowledges, when we see in Romans, all have sinned, all have fallen short of the glory of God. Jesus sees beyond that sinful past. And instead of seeing that sinful past, he sees a redeemed future. He sees beyond cultural norms. It shows us that loyalty and faithfulness includes us amongst God's people. Not biology, not genetics, not culture, and not history. It's no good saying my dad was a believer or my mum was a believer. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter saying I come from a culture which we're known to be a Christian culture. It doesn't matter. What it says is, where's your heart? How much does your faith dictate your future? Now, we can go into all sorts, and I could read a whole another sermon about the predestination and the prevenient grace of calling Ruth. But for our purposes, it's simply this. She said, I'm going to be all in for God. And God said, great, this is what's going to happen. And for you and I, we have an opportunity in life. And I hope most of us here listening today have already made this choice. But really, it comes down to this. Is if you choose God, God is going to call you and say, I'm going to hang so tight that nothing will take you away. Because you are my prize. You are my possession. You are my perfect bride. Can't you see God chatting down with the angels? let me tell you about my bride. She's so cool. This is what I went and did for her. And angels look on in wonder. Jesus Christ is our kinsman redeemer. It's why he was born human. It's why he came and had the time on earth. It's why he had to become incarnate, because he was connected as one of us. He wants to buy back. He wants to buy back those who want to be bought. Woo! By me. He sees beyond our sinful past and shows us a redeemed future. Each and every one of us have done something wrong. There's no doubt about it. But that is not the defining way God looks at us. I had discussions chatting with Jim earlier today, earlier this week. He was talking about David. And he made a really good point. David makes all sorts of mess ups. But David is beloved by God. I mean, does all sorts of daft things to David, but he's still beloved by God. Does it mean that David didn't have to repent at times? Of course he had to repent, but he's still beloved by God. Why? Because God sees beyond a sinful past to a redeemed future, and that's how he dictates to us. That's who it is. Ruth becomes a love story of a heart prepared. I prepared Ruth. I prepared Boaz. I was teaching him about this moment long before he even realized what he was knew what was going on. I've had it prepared, and it becomes symbolic because I prepared the heart of Jesus. The Son comes down willingly incarnate and says, I am going to redeem my creation. I love you so much. It's all going to be done. I'm going to take care of it. A redeemer who accepts us all. A redeemer who has the authority to buy us back. He has the desire to buy us back. And he has the ability to buy us back. And we see in Boaz and we see in Ruth, symbolically, Jesus Christ, the deep love he has for his bride, that he wants those who need to be redeemed and who want to be redeemed, he's going to say, and you will be redeemed. And he's going to lift us to be a better version of ourselves. And as soon as we see this baby being handed over to Naomi and saying, look, this is the symbol, isn't everything now perfect? You've been redeemed. You've got your connection with God back in the land. You've got a future established. You've got such a great son-in-law and such a great daughter-in-law now. You are back with one with the people. This is worth celebrating. Your daughter-in-law, Ruth, she's technically worth more than seven sons. Seven sons. I mean, seven sons. It's a perfect number. But this one woman's worth more than all of those perfect number of sons. This is how good she was to you. This is the symbol we have at the end of the book of Ruth. And it becomes an image saying, Jesus has redeemed his bride. All of us here are just part of that bride. And it's a perfect setup. And he is so proud that he tells the universe, she's mine. This church is mine. These people, these ecclesia, these people who gather every Sunday faithfully throughout the world, they are mine. And wow, they're great. And so you are. And so can I encourage you, live the life through your faith to become the people that God wants you to be. See yourself as God sees you, accepted fully, paid for by your kinsman redeemer, so that you can have the future he's laid out for you. Thank you.